KSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Sego.
Buju Anin.
Danach A. Ak Anzenu Shukwithan.
Tante.
Ay, Inu Hadikai.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hi, I'm Christine Genier. Welcome to Words and Culture, the Athabaskan episodes. This one is one of my favorite conversations. In this episode, we are talking about Dakwenje, or what you might have heard called Southern Toshone. Very specifically, Kwichel Chan Kwinje, or Ta'an Kwechan Kwinje. Ta'an Kwechan Kwinje is a dialect of Dakwenje. It is held by the people of Ta'an Mun, or Ta'an Mun Kwechan. It is one of the two ancestral languages of the region, the other one being Tagish Chan Kwinje. Ta'an Mun Kwech'anich'e, or I am Ta'an Mun Kwech'an. When I talk about hearing the language around me, spoken by my family, it is this language. And so it is this episode in which I sit down with Emaya, my mom's older sister, Nahiela Hazel Bunbury. Auntie is a language teacher, an elder and family matriarch. Auntie is well known for her language work, advocacy, and teaching. We had a good talk over tea in her living room one afternoon. I asked her to talk about language. While we do have our talk in English, Auntie starts the conversation as it should, in Dakwenje. Language is only one of the things Auntie and I have in common. Another one is an affinity for that old-time music. Music is a part of the language of any of us. Historically, we would gift each other story and song between families, between clans, to mark events. Our songs were banned in the creation of this country, along with our ceremonies. Celebrating our new and old music artists is not only a lifting up of talent to platforms historically unavailable to us, it is celebrating the resistance to those horrific laws. In recent years, Indigenous music has moved into all corners of the industry, with huge players in hip-hop, contemporary, traditional, opera. But sometimes, I really think about that connection to old country music. Part of it, I think, is that it takes us back to a time when that music always seemed to permeate the airwaves of the North, flying from the towers of the local Indigenous stations to the tabletop radios in the homes of our grandparents, to the trap lines, to the pickup trucks. And I think that's it. That's why we like that music we used to roll our eyes to when we were kids, because it's our parents' music, our grandparents' music. And after a while, you weren't just listening to who's on the radio. You're listening to long-ago relations singing along to their favorite songs. In this way, too, I think we can begin to understand where music and language is vital to the continuation of culture and how disrupting either and both is a violent tool of genocide, whether old and long-standing traditional music or those stories from our present reality. So many threads in what has become an intricate tapestry. One of those threads is that old-time fiddle music. From Mi'kmaq to Métis to Gwich'in, there is something about the wine and the rhythm when the bow hits the strings, and you better be ready to jig. For us in the Yukon, we go to Old Crow for our fiddle music. Before we get to visiting with Auntie, let's listen to a tune from Boyd Benjamin, the Flying Gwich'in Fiddler. This is Crooked Stovepipe. Thank you.
I-N-G, Hazel, Nahela Hazel Bunbury, Uye Kuje, Ta'an Mun Kutsan, Esho Ije, Amaye Ata, Irene Ye, John Adamson Kuye.
We're here talking about language. I've been asked to gather some stories from around our area with talking to people who work in language and language recovery. But you're not recovering language, Auntie. You always had the language.
Agay, so unu kutsan, akwinjeje, akwinjeje danke, eju kutchen akwinjeje.
So you didn't know that other way, how to speak English, maybe, until you started going to school.
Okay. Eju English ki dankoje, kasege, danke na kushe, nan kasege, dan janita koje.
As you weigh now, I don't think I know enough to keep going either in this way. Yeah.
Would you like me to switch to English?
I think maybe now, yeah. And then other people are going to hear this too, and I want them to understand. But that's really beautiful, and I always want people to know that we have strong speakers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way I can do work in language without the knowledge of my elders. It mm-hmm. doesn't work for me. So, mm-hmm. Shoni-san, thank you for hanging on to that. Through a lot, right?
Welcome.
You taught a lot in the schools. When did you start teaching?
1980, after my husband passed away, that I started working for the language center for about a year, then I got put in this school, and I just never left about 20-odd years later.
What was the language in the house when you were little?
Oh, definitely. My grandparents only spoke Danke. They did speak English, although not very well. So they just preferred to stay in their language, as did my mom and dad. With the kids, with all of my siblings understood and spoke the language, and we all had our own First Nation names, which our grandma gave us names as soon as Mom had a baby, because you weren't fully named or identified until you got your First Nation name. And the name was researched and passed on and made sure it was coming from the right moiety, or else you just sort of earned your name later on.
Seems like a lot of people are really excited about language right now. Has it always been that way?
No. Mostly, when I was growing up, most people, because of work and trying to get ahead, tried to learn English as much as they could. They had a problem because a lot of people my age were in the residential schools, at which time they didn't take time to teach us one-on-one English. So at best, we only knew very poor English, and we didn't know our own dialect at all. So we're stuck between, I don't know what kind of language we're talking, but at best I would say very poor English, because our elders always said, you have to learn English good so you could get a good job and so we could survive in today's society. So we had to struggle with that. Unfortunately, a lot of people lost their language already, and they didn't know their culture. They lost their culture. From the residential school, they lost their culture and their language. And as language and culture go hand in hand, in order to be able to understand your language and how it works, you need to know your culture, because the culture is so much different from the English cultures as people know it. The culture is so different, so you have to know your culture. You have to. And as my dear mama used to say, always said, you got to know where you come from.
I think in some ways it feels like we're, I don't know if lucky is the right word, but it feels like we still have a lot of culture in our family.
We were fortunate. Some people have lost their culture altogether because they never had that opportunity that I did. I was lucky because my grandparents kept the culture alive and the language. They moved a few miles out of town and preferred to live that way and to speak in their own language and live off the land. That's the way they wanted. And for myself, when I had my children and I became widowed, and I moved my children down to beside to live by my grandparents. I had to do that because they gave me that emotional support. My grandparents didn't have a whole lot of money, but they sure gave us a lot of emotional support and love, and they passed that language on to us. All of my own children, as well as my siblings' children, understand the language. And again, I just want to emphasize how we lived in the culture, and how we lived in our... And used our First Nation names. Grandma didn't even call us by our English names. She called us by our Dunkey names, and we all knew our names. Especially when Grandma yelled it out to us and told us, load the stove, get water, and all this was in Dunkey in her language. She wasn't gentle with us either. She didn't say, you know, you sit down there while I repeat the language to you. No, she yelled it out at us.
What kind of jobs did great-grandma have for you when you were a little kid?
The way we lived was different. We had to pack water from afar. We had to check our rabbit snares. We had to bring wood in and help chop the wood up. To load the stove, make sure the wood is all piled up. Those kinds of things. And, of course, you know, there was no light switches around there. Nothing. So those were the kind of chores. And it seemed like, you know, to some people it might seem really hard, but it is a beautiful life for us, and my children really liked it. And they thought it was exciting to take a gun and to go out and get a rabbit or a grouse for supper.
A lot of ownership over your own food and way of life that way.
Yes, exactly. And the thing now, too, with the elders like myself, when I get sick or when I start getting sick, I need to have traditional food. I'll start getting sick until one of my son has to boil a marrow bone for me, or fry up a grouse, or even boil a gopher or something. It seems like in my blood I need to have the First Nation food, and then I'll start to feel better.
I wonder if the language is that way too, when we start being able to have the language around us the way it used to be, it feeds us the same way that food does.
It probably does, but we have a fight ahead of us, and, you know, there's so much, and there's so much change. We've lost so much. We can still save it, but, again, a lot of the people don't remember how it was. They don't know the culture. They don't know their grandma had to do this, and they have to relearn all to how to tan moose hide, how to make moose sinew, and... They had to learn that every part of a moose, when we kill a moose, is used. Everything. Mm-hmm. Even the moose guts has got the medicine in it. That helps a lot. That's part of the medicine. Sometimes that's the only thing that will save your life. So we've lost a lot of that, sadly enough. So it's something that we have to teach ourselves again. Some people don't realize how important our Dulé teachings are, and that's really important too. We can't expect to live the old way. We had to, the old days, in order to keep law and order. Some rules are very stiff and very harsh and hard to take because it means death for some people, some of the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest part of that is banishment. That's the only easy part. The rest is pretty harsh. We have obligations. Each clan has an obligation to their own clan and the opposite clan. They need to uphold the opposite clan and help them through funerals. At the same time, they're responsible for the way that their own clan acts. If their own clan is, one person does something wrong from your clan, your whole clan is held responsible,
mm-hmm.
and will pay.
Very community-centered as opposed to the individual, right? So when you're out there behaving in the world, everything you do, if you do something wrong, it's not just you who has to account for it. It's your whole community.
Yes, exactly like that. Can you imagine long ago when there was no white people, say? That's the way we did things. That's how they kept law and order. And make sure you don't marry somebody from your own clan. That was important to them. That's one of the strict laws. And now I think they need to bring back and follow that Dulé teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Every clan around the Yukon and parts of Alaska, I believe, has a Dulé law. I asked my mom about it, and she said, that's our constitution. I said, what do you mean? Why do they call it Dulé law? And she said, the Dulé law is our constitution. That's the laws we lived by. That was passed down to us.
I like that. I've not heard it called that way before, but I understand it to be that way, but that makes sense. We have, as nations, we have constitutions.
Mm-hmm.
Our own nation now has a constitution, but that's what it is, as Dulé.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So,
you know, we're doing this, what we call language and culture revitalization work. It's interesting language that we use, but we use that when we're talking to institutions because we're talking about doing tanning workshops and fish cutting workshops. They all happen on the weekend. Maybe you're there for a couple of hours. But that you didn't learn things through workshops. This was your life.
Yes, we lived it.
So I'm curious how we're going to be able to do that transfer without being given the room to live it. If we're just being supported to do it in workshops, right?
Yes.
If we're not able to live it,
mm-hmm.
and see it and feel it all around us, then it becomes, I worry about it becoming just a hobby.
Yes.
Which is,
well, let us not forget the almighty dollar. It gets in the way of everything.
That's right. So we got to be able to tell those stories too. We want to be able to tell them yes, our way. When we talk about Dunke Koshe, because we know what we're talking about, you and I, but if someone was listening to this who's not from here, there's words that we've been called. So linguists called us Southern Toshone, our language group, but that's not our word.
No, it isn't. Apparently, according to what I've read, research, all my kids and everybody done, we don't know what Toshone means. It is not our word. That is not the name of us. We all have different areas, have different names around here, like people from Dawson, people from Ross River, and people from here, and people from Kluane country. We all have our own different names already. I don't know why I don't know how the word Toshone came up, and I don't even know what it means. I can't translate that word out.
What would we call ourselves then?
We are Kuchel-Jen.
Kuchel-Jen.
People of the Flatland Country.
And we come from all over a little bit, eh?
It's scattered, yeah. There's people up at the Tikini Way, Marsh Lake, Lake LaBarge, Champagne, all around there. People towards Pelly is Kuchel-Jen, but they're further down north. This is how we ended up being Northern Toshone and Southern Toshone, which I still don't know what Toshone means. As far as I know, somebody said that an explorer said it meant stick. So I don't know how the explorer knew that.
I don't know that one. And then we have a dialect. We have like a lot of languages. So you have the big language, right? And then we have dialects. And we have a specific way of speaking, too. Our own dialect, right? That would be different from how people, maybe our relations north to us speak.
Yes, because it's the intermarried, how people married from people further north or people from Champagne. That's slightly different, but we can understand each other perfectly. Yeah. It changes a bit. But we have, people can always tell where the person's from long ago just by hearing them speak. If you see a stranger in town and you walk in, met them on the street, as soon as you ask them, you'll know. And he answered you, you'll know exactly where he's from, by the dialect difference.
Auntie's house is always full of family. You heard her grandchildren coming in. It's good to be hanging out at Grandma's house. I did ask Nakiela to teach me a sentence in the language. This is what she shared.
Adunena ni kwen je nidin. Ni kwen je din o. That means, my kids, pick up your own language and hold on to your language.
That sounds like a good way to end this conversation.
Auntie is a wealth of knowledge and a lot of fun to hang out with in general, so I was really happy to be able to have this talk with her. Auntie is one of the last fluent speakers of the Tan Kwechan dialect of Dakwenje, Southern Toshone, so it's really important that we listen to what she has to say. And if you do get to sit down with Auntie, you always learn something. This is Diet and the Love Soldiers with We're Still Here.
They keep trying to take my flowers and replace them with guns. No one's gonna take my heart. That's a battle I've already won. You can run, you can hide. What good will that do us? At least we know we tried. At the end of the night, got nowhere to go. Stuck on this ball, we're out of control. Trust. Everyone knows, everyone sees. Truth is but a small part of what you want to believe. At the end of the night, got nowhere to go. Stuck on this ball, we're out of control, but we're still here. We'll raise our drinks tonight to life. Tomorrow we'll try to do what's right.
That was Diette and the Love Soldiers with We're Still Here. Diette was born in a tent and spent her childhood on her ancestral lands of Tuan Mankei of the Kluani First Nation people, right here in the Yukon. Her music is as diverse as her heritage of Southern Toshone, Tlingit, Japanese, and Scottish. Well, that's it for me. I feel so good about these talks that I was able to have with some incredible language workers here in the territory talking about Athabaskan languages, but Dahuanje, the indigenous languages in the Yukon. There are more than we were able to touch on here, and a lot more people doing some really, really great work. The enthusiasm and the hard work of our young people gives me so much hope, and I'm very proud of everybody. Shronithan, Shronithan, Shronithi. Next week, the Anishinaabe episodes begin with your host, Melissa Spence, from the Lake Manitoba First Nation. What a wonderful opportunity to learn about our relations across this country and how they're talking about language, and to be able to let folks know what we're doing around here. I'm Christine Genier. Shankle nanije dan e sokoseni denit e.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.